coming to you live from inside the globe, perched high atop the Bugle Planet building in sunny Gotham City. It's Hey Kids Comics with two guys who are always ready to seduce the innocent, your hosts, Andrew Farmer and the Jedi Cole Houston. And now it's time for Hey Kids Comics.
Did you see who King, I forget the name of the character, the King of Atlantis, is going to be played by none other than Dolph motherfucking Lundgren.
Oh, dear.
That
God.
Movie is going to be insane.
That role should have gone to Brian Blessed. I'm sorry.
Well,
I mean, King Volko is to fish what Voltan is to birds.
Listen.
I mean, and plus, it's the only role in which Ryan Blessed could effectively say, for the second time ever, "Dive!"
But also, Ryan Blessed can only hold his breath for about 30 seconds. So
it's ironic because he has twice the lung capacity of a normal human.
It's full of biscuits. It's all...
He breathed in. I'm sorry, I breathed in too many biscuits at the commissary this morning. What? Yes, I found that I could inhale foodstuffs and digest them that way as well.
Chuggy and I went to the commissary and had some biscuits.
The American kind.
I am unique.
I don't go in for sweets, so I love the American kind of biscuit. Hashtag me!
But also, I totally go in for sweets. Let's not.
Yeah.
I was lying.
Just don't inhale them.
Ryan Blessed lied. All right, we're starting this show.
All right, well, there's Tina Fey getting kicked off the airline on an American Express commercial.
Oh, God. All right. I'm not cutting that Brian Blessed bit, by the way. I'm leaving that in.
All right.
It stays. Brian Blessed stays in the picture. Damn it.
Hashtag inhaled biscuits.
Oh, this is our, speaking of, this is, ladies and gentlemen, this is Hey Kids Comics. I'm Andrew. That's Cold. Cole. He's cold.
I'm the coal on Infinite Earths today.
Speaking of Brian Blessed, we're going to talk about one of a kinds today.
Yes, indeed.
I am a professional. I'd never let it be said I'm not a professional. Cole came up with a brilliant concept for a show. By the way, I believe this is issue 223 of Hey Kids Comics. We are rather punchy already.
Yes, and that is very true as well. This is the sister show to last episode, and I honestly was looking back. Back and forward at the schedule, and I honestly cannot say with any certainty whether or not the scheduling of the Two of a Kind episode on the 222nd episode was accident or design.
If
it was by design, it was absolutely brilliant. If it was by accident, it was equally brilliant.
I saw Sliding Doors with Ben Affleck. I know how this works.
Yeah, it was weird. I don't know, like I was channeling Two-Face or something.
I wish I was Two-Face.
I wish I was Two-Face.
I wish I was Two-Face. Oh, we need to tell that story again.
Hallmark card, you know, just to send people to confuse them.
Once a year, we need to gather the younglings around the fire and tell them about the before time when I wish I was Two-Faced.
Right.
That was every metaphor, by the way. That could have been perfect. I think that was every metaphor for everything. So now we digress. Okay, so Cole, what is the show about?
This is literally, you know, last time we talked about these pairings of characters, often unlikely pairings, were just like, out of the blue, somebody had the most brilliant idea and said, hey, let's put these two guys together and see how it flies, and writers ran with it. This is the more of a chestnut episode, because we are going to roast the old chestnut of being the last of your kind, the last son of Krypton, the last Martian, the last man standing when everybody else from your race or world died. Channeling Crow there.
Right.
It's what happens when everyone from your world dies.
And I'll tell you, doing the research for this show, this trope, the sole survivor, the last man standing, the last of your kind trope, is possibly the widest net you can cast. This is illegal. It's illegal how many dolphin I caught when I was fishing for this tuna.
We just dumped them all overboard, callously feeding the sharks.
Because we're going to be pretty specific tonight, but, you know, I challenge you. Matter of fact, Cole, I would challenge you later in this issue to give me any comic book character and not allow me to figure out how he was the last of something, because everyone is the last of something.
That's true, but the distinction, the clear defining element here is you, at least as far as you know, and we have to have that caveat, as far as you know, every single, it's the ultimate orphanage. And I don't mean a place where orphans are kept until they can be adopted out. I'm talking about being orphaned. The ultimate way to be orphaned is not only to have your entire family destroyed, but all of your people are completely gone, usually because someone had the foresight to chuck your ass off the planet before it got the finger.
Sometimes you were just off planet at boarding school or in another dimension, or you did it yourself.
Exactly. There are some do-it-yourselfers out there as well.
There's some think-for-yourselfers out there.
That's right. So to kind of put everything into context and kind of give us a jumping off point, a home base, this is base camp as we climb this mighty Everest of sole survivors of the last of their kind, of the characters who can never play games that are fun for the whole family.
By the way, for the record, don't search anything with these two words in it right now. Comic books and last of their don't search comic books last of their race, because now's not a good time to search for comic books and race. Everybody's upset about something. It took me a long time to dig through that to get to this.
Yeah, I bet you have to go down into the lower Cretaceous before you get to things that have anything to do with things that didn't happen yesterday or in the latest Avengers Gold. What?
It's friggin' X-Men Gold. That's a whole thing.
Or X-Men Gold. I'm sorry. Avengers Gold would have been even worse.
All right. So where do we want to start this journey?
Our base camp is going to be, we're going to establish our camp, and we're going to have our supply line starting at 1980 something's, it's about 83, 84, something like that, that we were.
The summer of 69?
There was the Crisis on Infinite Earths. My entree really into DC, I was a Make My Marvel man until I was introduced. And it didn't hurt that my introduction to DC, that the Secret Wars was going on concurrently.
Right.
So you had a really good example of how to do things right and wrong simultaneously on either side of the fence there. So, and somehow Marvel still came out on top. But the Crisis on Infinite Earths not only eliminated an infinite number, an indefinite number of worlds, many of which, as far as we know, were never visited by anybody. their stories were just, most of them are like Mundania and Xanth novels, I guess, as far as we know. But over the decades, it really, this jumping off point was the Flash of Two Worlds. And that opened a floodgate for writers over decades to say, I want to do this story. Well, you can't do that story. But it doesn't take place on Earth. It's like they come in like Professor Farnsworth, like, I've got this great story that takes place in the DC universe. Oh, really? What happens? Superman dies. You can't tell that story, but it doesn't take place in the DC universe.
just dies. Like,
so essentially, there was a conceit that if you wanted to tell the story of what if the Justice League were all bad guys? Well, they didn't come from regular Earth. They came from Earth 3, where they rule the world with an iron fist, and the only good guy is Lex Luthor. Because that's naturally what happens. You have almost an equal number of good guys and bad guys on all these Earths, except apparently this one gets one.
Right.
Like the Family Guy. The Family Guy Spider-Man of Infinite Earths. So something had to give. DC was coming up on a major milestone. They were celebrating, I believe it was the 50th anniversary of DC. Because that was also the point where Marvel tried to really play up that the character of Captain America was 50 years old, even though he wasn't a Marvel character at that time.
Okay.
They were literally like, oh, but it's Captain America's 50th anniversary. Like, nice try. You're not fooling anybody.
That's
Marvel,
like those people that say they've been together for, like, we've been together for 30 years. Yeah, well, you dated all through high school. Doesn't count until you're married.
Yeah. And, yeah, basically it was that. Until you put a ring on Captain America. You...
I've been trying for years.
Who hasn't? But, The crisis was a sort of a necessary evil because they wanted to consolidate all these things. Because as DC bought properties or obtained properties, like, forcing Fawcett to cough up Captain Marvel, a.k.a. Shazam, in a really just one of the worst cash grabs ever, but that's another story. They needed a way to just kind of consolidate these things, put Captain Marvel on the same planet as... and put the Blue Beetle, and then just, like, let's stop having to, have some sort of cosmic explosion so that the Question can come and help Batman.
Right, right.
It was a tough case. Thank goodness there was some mystery thing that happened to get your ass over here, because otherwise I'd never have solved it as quickly.
Otherwise, I don't know what we do.
I don't know. It'd have been okay in the long run, but just not as quick. So, what in the course of that story, what you got was the death of worlds, both known and unknown. So you got to, if you were unfamiliar, like I didn't really realize, except for reading articles back when there were magazines about comics.
Right.
It's the ultimate irony.
Speaking of Soul Survivors, I don't know if there's any of those left, are there? I think Previews might
I don't
be around.
Think, yeah. Well, Previews was more of a catalog anyway, so it gets away with it. Its existence is a necessity. But, the old comic book magazine is gone the way of the Dodo, because I used to love, the Dodo had some of the most precise geopolitical and social articles, and I read the Dodo for the articles. I know a lot of people, it was the cartoons, but... I read the New Yorker for the cartoon, thank you.
Damn it.
What you got with the crisis was the destruction of these various worlds and some of the characters that they were willing to let go. And because they weren't willing to let a lot of characters go, they created worlds that you'd never seen before solely to destroy them. And one of them was one where you had the superheroes, the super champions of this world were a kind of the royal family. And you saw them just subsequently being destroyed by this great wave of energy that was plowing through all these worlds and consuming them. And even before that, you had the character, the sort of not really anti-hero, but the sympathetic character of the series was Pariah.
Right,
who was
right.
You, the course of the story, you ultimately find out this guy who keeps appearing at the death of all these worlds and bawling his eyes out actually had a very sympathetic story that he was a scientist who was playing God. And you just get all Vince of, hey, you play with fire, you will get burned.
Wait, is he being cast as Matthew McConaughey in the Zack Snyder?
I see a whole bunch of
cosmic breakers
out there.
No,
I see a whole bunch of physics lawbreakers.
I see a whole bunch of string theory out there. Gross.
G-string theory in that case.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. I appreciate that.
That's the Big Bang theory. All right, I'm not even going to go where that was going to take me.
Yeah,
but
you were heading down a road there.
I was heading down the wrong road. But, he was essentially this super scientist who tried to breach the origin of the universe. And suffered the same fate as the precursor to the Guardians of the Universe.
Okay.
Not to be confused with, Groot and Yondu and Star-Lord and the gang. The Guardians of the Universe, of course, from the creators of the Green Lantern Corps. A very wonderfully woven storyline, but this character, when he tries to discover the origin of the universe, his lab blows up and basically sets off the energy that begins to consume the infinite Earths and leaves him somehow in this, less flamboyant Wave Rider kind of way where he's just sort of is moving between worlds, always forced forever in this kind of, Greek concept of Hades, character way of having to be forced to watch these worlds die because of his own actions. And apparently, after a few billion worlds, it gets to be quite a rush, but you also get to, you know, it's the same story, different chapter. Then at one point, he finally gets the idea, I wonder if I could, like, yank somebody into this bubble of not being killed by the great force field wall of doom.
Right, the time-space tsunami that I created.
Yeah, so after, you know, waiting for the rest of the royal family of this planet to be completely obliterated, he scoops up poor Lady Quark, who is like the queen of her now about to be extinguished world, and yanks her out of reality, and then, you know, that kind of pisses her off, but she ultimately becomes a necessary force. But she is one of so many, like Pariah himself, the last of their world.
Right.
And in their case, it's pretty much stayed that way. There were no rocket ships or, but, you know, even to play into the ultimate, the best known of this chestnut, the big mother, the elephant in the room is Superman, of course, who, regardless of the origin, pre or post crisis, is rocketed to Earth by his parents as the you know, infant sole survivor who gets to, depending on which version you're looking at, either have his history abbreviated in a few panels or retrofit. Because wouldn't it be cool if we had a teen Superman?
Right, maybe he can wear jeans.
Yeah, and be angst-ridden and constantly upset his various love interests. I'm sorry, and that's Smallville.
And for 12 seasons, it can be narrated like How I Met Your Mother by Marcus.
Indeed.
Goddamn, like Neil Jarrell, son of Jarrell. Jarrell's the voice of whoever did the Bob Saget from How I Met Your Mother, like just the whole time, just doing narration. That's not
well, like the Wonder Years. It's like
nice,
super Wonder Years.
Nice, yeah, no, for
this
real.
This is yet another example of how my siblings and I would spout off phrases that didn't exist at that period in history. There's something seriously wrong with my memories.
I'm going dark, ladies and gentlemen. I can't. Right. No, but I always thought that the Superman trope would serve greatly from just having Yoda around, so that every time somebody would go, well, he is the last son of Krypton, Yoda just pops up. Like, oh, there is another. And another, and another.
Didn't you just, like, come here last week and say there's another? Oh, no idea do you have how many they are.
Right.
There's nothing more legion the last sons of Krypton are.
Really, it's just it's a motorcycle gang name. That's all it is, the last sons of Krypton. Oh, shit. No, yeah, that's just it, because but like you were saying before the show, right, though, we, you know, like in all things, you don't stay the last of anything for long if you're a comic book character.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. But the, you know, the old last son of Krypton rocketing your infant son off trope was even plays into the crisis, because the Lex Luthor of Earth 3, after watching the was it the Crime Syndicate?
Yep.
When you rule the entire planet, your original name, just, I guess they couldn't think anything better, so they just kept it the Crime Syndicate. But, you know, he watched the Crime Syndicate be obliterated and used his super Luther brain to cook up a kind of a cosmic top version of the cosmic treadmill to put his infant son Alexander in and shoot him off to the monitor. So he becomes like this ultimate Superman trope that then, ironically, I think goes on to become instrumental in another Superboy going bad. And I kind of lost track of things at that point. But
right.
What you've got there, though, is I thought that was really kind of a neat, like, here is another world's Superman getting shot off into the cosmic nothing instead of to a different planet. And actually, you know, coming from Earth, and because of that process, instead of it being like, oh, yellow sun, make Superman strong, it was like the process of like shooting him through the dying universe into the monitor made him like one with, you know, he had like these weird cosmic baby, like, you know, part skin, part Starfield.
Right, like the 2001 baby after...
Yeah, with the big bald head.
The big bald head. Damn it.
That monolith wasn't trying to kill us, it was trying to help us.
Superman woke up in a weird 70s hotel room. I'm all over the map tonight. I can't help it.
Oh, really? Would Superman wake up in a bathtub full of ice with a kryptonite scalpel next to him?
And a note. Get to a hospital with the initial L.
LL.
That's right.
LL Cool J 2.
Mama said knock you out. Martha. Wait, my mom's name's Martha. She said knock you out.
Yeah.
Damn it.
Martha Cool J.
Martha said knock you out. I'm going to knock you out. Why can't we do that whole thing?
It's Martha Cool J.
Martha Cool J. That's what Superman called his mom. That's why he wasn't allowed to stay in Smallville very long.
That's right.
It's time for you to go to the big city. Why? Because you keep saying Martha said knock you out. No, yeah, I always liked the fact that that Luther looked like Stephen King's It from that time period.
Oh, that's right. It was sort of like Pennywise and Dollar Wise, really. If you think about it. That's Captain of Industry.
He looked like one of those Prometheus aliens with a giant orange wig on.
Like, hey guys, look what I found!
Hey!
I found a bozo wig.
No, yeah, but the events of Infinite Crisis orphaned a whole shit ton of people, didn't they?
Oh, yeah. Like, those that didn't wipe out were often orphaned, and then it also brought other, like, you know, it brought you the Earth to Superman.
Right.
Himself was like, oh great, now we're. How come you got to have all of everyone from Krypton came to my world? It was like literally just me. I mean, I stayed the last son of Krypton. I think I deserved it. It should have been Earth 1. Ours should have been Earth 1. We were here first anyway.
Right, look how much
we're Earth 1 and you're Earth 2. Cal, me. it's all just like one Earth now.
Yeah, there's no more.
Damn it!
You won. All right, you're still here.
Earth Prime Superboy destroy you then. That'll show you.
Whiny Earth Prime Superboy.
Super Millennial before they were a thing.
Wow.
Predicted Millennials.
Old white guys talking about kids. That's what we are.
That's our new podcast, Old White Guys Talking About Kids.
That's right. You damn kids and you don't know. No, but like, I know the Huntress showed up after that, right? As
have Rompa Stompas when you were a kid.
You don't know if I'm Captain Kangaroo, Whippa-Snappa.
That was very street, a Whippa-Snappa.
Whippa-Snappa? I'm from the streets. I don't know if you know that.
Just like Vanilla Ice.
Exactly. My origin story of Vanilla Ice is...
The mean streets of Carrollton, Texas.
Vanilla Ice thought he was the last of his kind until he met me. So, who else made it after the events of Infinite Crisis, after everything got boiled down, after somebody guessed how many marbles were in the jar, if you ever have read Infinite Crisis, and it all got distilled down to Kenny Loggins beard squeezing whiskey.
Wow.
Whiskey.
I haven't heard of Kenny Loggins beard squeezing in nearly a decade.
It's been a while. So who else was left out of that mess? Because I know there was a bunch.
Well, you kind of start that mess with a bunch of orphans, because DC is replete with these like literally planetary orphans or Geno orphans, if you will, and that they the rest of their planet is completely obliterated in accidental or purposeful genocide. But you know, Martian Manhunter was the last of his kind.
Don't even get me started on Martian Manhunter.
Again, as far as he knew.
Don't even get me started. I need to think. I'm going to fly back to Mars where everyone I know is dead and just think. And like every third issue that features Martian Manhunter, where'd John go? Oh, back to Mars to think.
He's gone to his thinking planet.
He's gone to his thinking planet. His cold, devoid of life thinking planet.
See, it was a stinking... No, not stinking planet. It's thinking planet. But You know, and the thing is, it becomes kind of tenuous to call certain lasts of their race the last of their race, because inevitably somebody shows up, especially in DC. So it's sort of like that song about, you know, she'll say she's an orphan after you meet her family. It's
not
like
a Black Crowes reference. Good Lord.
I like it when I make you proud.
That wasn't even a deep cut. That was a switchback. We're calling that the switchback tonight, ladies and gentlemen. Cold on one.
So it's hard to play that game there. In fact, it's also one of those things where you look at the whole, you know, that particular chestnut, and most of it's occurring over at DC. I was really racking my brain to think, does this even happen at Marvel? And the interesting thing is, it's not often that pronounced.
It's not, but it does happen, for sure.
Oh, absolutely. Do you have an example you can cite? Because I can have the first thing that came to mind when I finally came to the conclusion, or managed to work out the conclusion, that there was a that this happened at Marvel.
Well, one of the big ones for me, and this is more of a recent development outside of what we knew for a really long time, is Galactus.
Oh, very nice.
Yeah, so Galactus, because
he is literally, nobody's coming from his old neighborhood.
No, because he's pre-Big Bang. He's way back in the Wayback Machine.
Yeah, he's like the, not only is his world of origin gone, his universe of origin is gone.
Yeah, and a new universe was born.
He is literally a universal beard squeezing.
he's the old man at the gin mill. That's what he is. He's making it happen. Hold on a second. Sorry about that, guys. But come to find out that it was ultimately, he was supposedly, he wasn't a villain to start with. He was a good guy that gave life to planets that was twisted through that event.
Well, he became sort of a bizarro Galactus.
Right, for sure.
A bad copy or something.
He's been fixed now in comics by a group.
Castrated?
Yes. they castrated it. There's a big rubber band.
No, actually, it was just Reed Richards.
Oh, damn it.
Worst day of his life.
Oh, Reed Richards castrated. No.
Most god-awful hour of his life.
Rocky Dennis, Back to the Future, Reed Richards castrating Galactus.
My mind never stops.
That goes into the lexicon of shit I never want to think about ever again. Yet, oddly enough, dichotomously enough, I'm writing it into the notes right now.
That's amazing, because it's like, you know, here I am, the leader of the first family of superheroes, and perhaps one of the most brilliant and impossible minds of this or any century. Reduced to a castration band.
Well, and the funny thing is, I could see
coming like 100-pack at Tractor Supply.
Right, I can
only
see,
on colossal scale.
I can see it where it's like Adam Warlock and Pip, and you know Reed Richards is there with the Fantastic Four, and Galactus is, you know, wreaking havoc on the universe, and Adam Warlock looks at him, he's like, Reed, you know what you have to do, and Reed's like, God, shit, that's really, right. Really, I built the ultimate nullifier.
You should have built the ultimate chemical castration, because
I found and created the door to a place called the Negative Zone. It's another universe, and you expect me to go take my spindly body, wrap it all up around Galactus's junk, and then constrict myself to the point, and for long enough, that his giant, colossal, omniversal sack falls off. And that's what you want me to do. Yeah, yeah.
You know, the way you put that, I can just see Adam Warlock saying, you know, for the first time since he met her way back in the 70s.
Yeah.
Saying, that is so hot.
Like, God, you make my Kirby crackle.
Oh, wow.
Speaking of, wasn't Adam Warlock the first and last of his kind?
I think he was sort of like willed into existence in a Kirby cocoon full of who knows what.
I think you'll find that's how most of this happens in the Marvel universe.
Yeah, that's so true. And then later, her, who is now, I think she's in Guardians of the Galaxy under one of her seven different names.
Yeah, she's...
I can't remember what it is. It's like, you know. But Yeah, him and her were pretty much created the same way. They're sort of bioengineered out of cosmic matter and whatever the ingredients of the Powerpuff Girls were.
Right. But not to be seconded with Marvel, because this is the way Marvel does it. In DC, yeah, we get Superman, and then Superman's on Earth interacting with, you know, Earthlings. In Marvel, you get Galactus, and you also get the Elders of the Universe, which are all the last known survivors of their race.
Oh, yeah, everything's on sort of a cosmic scale, because also, being a little bit pissy about his situation long before it got worse for him and Reed both, Galactus would go around and devour worlds, and I guess, who was it, Norrin Rad was the first, which is the raddest name ever.
It really is, before his time. It was way before his time.
He was rad when rad wasn't cool, or rad for that matter, but... who was like the shrewdest swindler on Zen Law, I believe was the name of the planet.
It was, yes.
Damn, check out the big brain on Cole. Big brain full of useless knowledge.
Digging it up.
That's right. But, you know, he had to have been like the biggest con man on Zen Law, like the untold story, because he basically, in this sort of Promethean way, steals the fire of the gods by convincing Galactus that, you know, when you're carb loading on my planet, you're talking like me, myself, set apart in a ratio between everything else you have on this world. It's like, are you missing anything? It's like if a molecule fell off your donut. I'm not talking about like a sprinkle. I'm talking just like a molecule. You wouldn't even be aware that happened. I'm sure it happens all the time. You know, a stray molecule just sort of skitters off across, you know, gets consumed by one of those hideous dust mite things that they always show pictures of on Yahoo. Like blown up a million times. Like, oh, look, this is not an alien invader. It's like
in Dayton, this is an aside, but in Dayton, as you drive down 75, which is the main, you know, it's the highway that goes from Lake Erie to Florida, there's a giant billboard, and I mean it is giant, with a giant digital billboard with a giant blowed up dust mite on it or a bed bug on it. Like, just giant. I'm like, good God, every morning I gotta see this thing?
Yeah, well, that's the thing that's eating those stray molecular donut pieces.
That's right.
So, and Glass is like, you know, I really thought about it that way. So yeah, sure, I guess I could spare you in the cold, dead vacuum of space. He goes, yeah, about that. That's not really what is technically sparing. He's like, oh, you got a point there. Tell you what, I'll use my cosmic power to make you into a superhuman, and you can do something that I've never done. This is kind of new. But we're going to pay a courtesy to the planets that are going to be completely obliterated to feed me hunger by sending you ahead so you can be the messenger that they shoot.
See, I like to imagine it's more like he shows up, you know, he somehow manages maybe spaceship, however he gets up there, right? Gets up right in his face. He's like, hey, Galactus, you like this planet? I got the best planets. I can show you where the best planets are, the most tasty planets, the freshest planets. All you got to do is give me the means to get there. I like surfboards.
I've got a thing for sure. I don't know what they are.
That's right.
I caught an old Frankie and Annette movie that was floating down space. And I thought, that's the way to go. And if you could, like, you know, to protect me, if you could make me completely, if you can just chrome me from head to toe,
that's
and the
right.
surfboard while you're at it.
I want my ride pimped, all of it.
It'll be like that, like, FreshBox or one of those things where, you know, the subscription service where, you know, once a week they send you a meal for two.
Right, like Blue Apron or something.
Yeah, exactly. And it's like, you know, I know you've got like some kind of cosmic tapeworm thing going on. So, you know, let me help facilitate this, because there's some, I'm pretty sure that like just 300 light years away, you just passed one of the juiciest, ripest planets. I mean, this thing is ready.
It's so gross. It just sounds so gross.
Hashtag ripe planet.
And me without my balls, damn you, Richard.
Yeah,
I was planet. I was going to bone that whole
plan, to use Reed Richards in the most unorthodox way ever, was actually the brainchild of Ego, the Living Planet, for precisely that reason. I mean, frankly, how many meals can give you head?
Oh, God. He just comes back around every 4 or 5 years. Just eat
me. I'm not
going to
kill you.
Just eat me. No, hold still. Please. Hold still. No, I don't have arms.
Exactly. You're better than T-Rex. Okay.
Oh, no. What?
I tell you, I'm dangerous. I need to tone this down, too, because we're about to go make all these public appearances for the Rancor.
Get it out now. Get it all out. But yes, no, the elders of the universe, the whole idea of the elders of the universe are that each one of them achieved a kind of intellectual and celestial perfection on their own planets, outstripping their the need for a race. So they're their own race, but they all come from an individual planetary race. So you've got, you know,
I was not aware of that. I thought they were all like relatives. They were like cousins who vacationed together, like in Cocoon.
Yeah, right. Wilford Brimley's out there. No, but you know, right. You've got like the Collector and the Grandmaster,
the Gardener, the Champion.
Yeah. So they're all essentially the last of their race that banded together to form a new race called the Elders, which are all from their, you know, whatever respective lands. To be assholes, apparently. That's their sole purpose.
Yeah, just go ahead and just sort of impart their will upon the galaxy.
Right.
Intergalactic social justice warrior.
But the other side of that is recently, now you were talking about Marvel, but recently through the Secret Wars, the third Secret Wars, the fourth Secret Wars event in Marvel, where they took all of the various different universes and story arcs that Marvel's ever done, sort of their Elseworlds stories, like Age of Ultron and the Inferno and House of M's, all of our favorites. And smashed them, smushed them all together like so much silly putty into one world and killed off 99.999% of each of those other respective worlds. Much like Crisis on Infinite Earths that we were talking about earlier. You got the Old Man Logan universe. Old Man Logan came out of that and entered the Earth 616 area code. Miles Morales, Ultimate Spider-Man, you got... We just found out this week that in X-Men Blue, on the other side of the fence from X-Men Gold, X-Men Blue, that Wolverine's kid from the Ultimate Universe ended up here because you can never have too many Wolverines. So that's what they did, and it's kind of ridiculous, but, you know, what are you going to do? What are you going to do? It is what it is.
Well, Wolverines and Spider-Man sell. I mean,
that's absolutely correct. No question about it. You know, there's two that we haven't talked about that I kind of want to touch on. If you would, there's an analog Marvel DC character that are the last of their respective universes. That would be Mr. Mixelplick and the Impossible Man. Both are the last known survivors of their universe. Impossible Man, if you remember his homeworld, it was Pop-Upian.
Oh, it was Pop-Up. Pop-Up.
Yeah, because he's Pop-Upian. That's right.
Yes, okay. He's Pop-Upian. In fact, their planet was pretty much actually doomed to failure because it was just a pop-up planet.
Over Christmas.
It was they didn't have a full scale. You know, they wouldn't give them like a full lease. It was just a pop-up, and when the lease expired, then they either had to like find a new land or go out of business. So it was sort of the new thinking in economics with realty and commercial businesses, that sort of thing.
But yeah, and the flip side,
it was a ramen pop-up experience.
That was a dry ramen.
That was just for you, sir.
Oh God, it was so good. Quick aside,
and the one other person in the universe who might get that just off of ramen pop up.
If you haven't watched the Jean-Claude Van Damme Amazon pilot, good Lord,
watch
the
Jean-Claude Van Damme Amazon.
It got picked
pilot.
Up. They're making the series. I don't know.
They
when.
Got picked up.
Yeah, that and the Holy Tick crap. Got picked up. So they're making that.
Well, I knew
series.
The Tick got picked up, but I didn't know that. I thought that was rejected.
I think it got picked up. I think that both of those two shows got enough enough fan outpouring that they needed to see more. it's a dry ramen experience. Damn it. Do you know more about Mixelplex than I do? Probably.
A bit. He's got kind of an unusual history because he comes from a whimsical time in the in the DC universe or in the Superman mythos. And it was just meant to be sort of like the thorn in Superman's side, and I guess to it was sort of like the Games Magazine of Superman, where he would like show up and pull some prank, and Superman would have to figure out some way within that context to make this inevitable happen. I think that ultimately he was just sort of like a self-dooming type of personality.
Right.
So, yeah, he knew full well, you know, from the outset, he gives Superman the means of his own dispatch for, I think, a month or something. And literally all of his schemes are engineered to have two or three potential opportunities for Superman to trick him. He's just really, you know, he's just a booster.
Right. He likes to get beaten, you know, in a way. Well, he's sort of like Ego the Living Planet, you know.
Yeah, but he doesn't suffer the same kind of Lipton fate that Ego does.
No, he doesn't.
I'll let people put that one together on their own.
The Alan Moorean fate that that befalls Ego the Living Planet every 5 or 6 years, like an eclipse.
Oh.
But yeah, no, that's so there's one that I really want to talk about. That I feel is more important, I guess, than a lot of these that we've talked about to me personally. Like you know, we've kind of joked around, and the one that and I talked about it, I think, in one of the shows that we've done recently in the recent past was Yorick in Why the Last Man. Literally the last man. So
it's rather ironic because dinner tonight, Catherine Vogt on the opposite end of the male age spectrum, Commandy, the last boy on
Earth. Damn it, Catherine! That was my singer. I was waiting third act.
You said that was my third act singer.
I got third act problems now, Catherine. I got to go back and rewrite the whole script.
Yeah, it's like so much Reed Richards on you all of a sudden.
She did. She emasculated me like Reed Richards. Wait, what? No, really, honestly,
she's quite proud of
now. Fine, I'll go with the Warlord then.
All right.
So Mike Grell's the Warlord. No, Why the Last Man, Yorick, was that? It was one of the more poignant Soul Survivor stories that, you know, he woke up with whatever particular G mutation allowed him to survive whatever befell every man on the face of the earth, and then his trials and tribulations as to, you know, and it reads almost like The Walking Dead, but, you know, instead of there being a physical enemy that's going to bring out the best and worst in humanity, it's this idea that, you know, what he represents. So does he represent the evil, or, you know, all the not necessarily great traits or the good traits, or should he be used for study, scientific study, to figure out why he survived, or basically, you know, used as a baby factor, just produced so they can restart civilization.
Yeah, should he just be like the drive-up stud service?
Right. So the it reads really interestingly, and you know, all of the different ways and how quickly society would turn and what would happen.
Just want to see a one-shot follow-up called Why the Last Man, the Paternity Years. Because the sheer volume of paternity, I mean, you'd practically have to be immortal just to get a head start on things.
Right, but I mean, you know, you've got cults that start around him and cults that start against him, and one of the coolest parts of that story is, so whatever happens on Earth, what they take into account is the fact that somewhere up in space there's an international space station. And on that International Space Station, there are astronauts that aren't affected by this, because it's not a mystical thing. It's something physical that happened within the atmosphere. So there are men in orbit that can either come, and I'm not going to spoil what happens, that can either come down or not. So that is a really cool, like, 7 or 8 issues of that part of that story arc. It's really, really, really cool. Why the Last Man? Again, if you haven't read it, it's awesome. I sent Cole, like, the 5th book or something just to piss him off.
I'm like, oh, this is so cool. I haven't read, wait a minute, I don't think I've ever read this at all.
Surprise, Cole, you got a chore. Go find the first 2 books of Why the Last Man. It'll be worth your while. yeah, so so go, let's,
I'll probably go and like buy the third book three times before I realize I've already got it. Stop buying.
All right, so let's hit Fables.
Yeah.
So let's go back to Commandy because it's my favorite.
Yes,
it's my favorite.
We ought to do a show on Commandy sometime. Get Jeffrey Carlton on there to talk about it because he knows about Command D,
the bunker?
Facility, the bunker where you got to start. But yeah, Command D is quite. I was actually grilled on his status as last boy on Earth because I mentioned like the cabbie from Escape from New York.
Ernest Borgnine.
Yeah, there was this cabbie that he encountered that looked like Jack Kirby.
Right.
And I very distinctly remember this issue of Commandy where the guy's either has a grenade launcher or is just chucking this grenade at the these gorilla, like the animal, not the fighter, gorilla soldiers, oddly enough. So it's like this Planet of the Apes Escape from New York thing, after one, before the other. And he's like, hey, monkey, how about a pineapple? Well, then he's not the last one. I said, no, he's the last boy on Earth. So he's eventually going to age out of his title, which is rather frightening.
Well, but you got to time it right, because eventually Jack Kirby, weird cabbie, who nobody knows how he got there, by the way, eventually he's going to die off, and then Commandy will be the last man on Earth.
Oh, could be the last man on Earth if the other men die. Because meanwhile, according to one cover, Bulldogs were dying like men.
the supporting cast.
Oh, I mean, you know, just an entire army of Bulldog people dressed like, you know, some sort of Prussian soldiers from the 17th century. I don't know why the bayonet had come back in style in that post-apocalyptic hellscape, but it did. Like this musketry unit.
Well, also, don't forget, he ran around with a tiger in a Scottish bespoke suit, like that scene like that scene in Highlander 2 when Sean Connery comes back.
Mr. Talky Tawny.
The inexplicable Scottish-Egyptian sword fighter from Spain comes back and immediately goes and gets himself a suit. Tawny found a hell of a tailor after the great disaster.
Goddamn. Oh, yeah, and then he had the Marmaduke doctor.
Right, the big professor. Dog doctor, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, the weirdest just series of just let loose, really. Okay, this is it. You know, the last boy on Earth, but not the last reasoning, thinking thing on Earth, because somehow lizards and pumas and sloths and gorillas mayflies.
It's like this more like a Zootopian hellscape. So, like, you know, except that like, what's her name? You know, Jenny Hopps isn't so sweet in this world.
Right. She's got like she's basically the barbed wire of this world.
Barbed wire. It's barbed wire rabbit. Wow.
It's like briar rabbit if you say it fast.
Oh, wow.
But yeah, this was one of my favorites just because how bizarre it is. Like, and they just explain it away, like, because it's Kirby, right? It's radiation. Yeah, the radiation. It's new. It's the radiation. It did it. And all
it's
these
fun.
Animals.
It's nice. It's good.
All these animals escaped from the zoo, and now they're all people animals except for horses. You can ride those still.
Yeah, you can still write. Horses were stupid. They didn't get it on the deal.
They didn't get in. They were last in line.
Yeah, we actually pushed them so that we would have horses when everybody was done. Like, force all over. Oh, here, horses, go over the corral.
All right. Well, we need to start wrapping this up, but I do want to get to one last. Man, where did that hour go?
I think part of it went straight into Galactus's crotch tile area.
I think it did. That's why he wears that skirt. So I wear that weird tunic kilt thing that hangs low because Reed's just wrapped up around there.
That's right. It took 6 months, but eventually the apples fell from the tree.
But I want you to talk a little bit about Lobo. We've got like 10 minutes left to talk about Lobo before we got to get out of here.
Absolutely, yeah. Lobo is another one of those unique ones where I don't know. I think they may have just been trying to make fun of themselves at DC with Lobo, because he was sort of his self-styled purpose in life was to be the last of his kind.
Right.
That was his sole ambition, and so he personally committed universal genocide on his species
single-handedly.
Yeah, just like by himself. I mean, it wasn't even one of those Hudsucker experiment or whatever the hell that is, where you get the, you know, you start out by getting all the office to kill each other. That way, you kind of whittle down the population. I mean, without virtue or purge or anything, he just like personally went door to door. Hi, hi. Is that a comma? No, I'm just kidding. Just, you know, no, and apparently it was like Santa Claus, because he must have got them all in one night. I mean, nobody was hiding in spider holes or safe rooms or
off-planet.
Yeah, off-planet or anything. He just like got back from fighting the Omega Man as Space Joker. Changed into his
Mega Man is Space Joker.
You know, he switched over into his Sons of Anarchy cosplay, and just, even though he didn't know what that meant back then, and just started killing everybody.
Right, yeah. And then went on a galactic...
Oh, I'm sorry. He put it on his Sons of Anarchy cosplay and roided himself the hell up. Because he was comparatively gaunt when he got his start.
And he went back to being gaunt later.
Really?
But in the middle there, you know, he was ripped and had a sentient motorcycle and a big chain hook. He looked like a repo man from hell. Like,
that's right. He had the bulldog from Little Nicky and...
Damn it. All right. Why don't we end
but
this?
But like Superman, though, I have to point out that Superman... He turned out not. There was a storyline or a miniseries or something where, like, Mrs. Kravitz from next door, Zarnian Mrs. Kravitz, was still around.
Jeez.
And then he was forced into some sort of weird intergalactic driving Miss Daisy with this constant reminder of his failure at a task he felt like he'd put behind him.
Right. Oh man, so good. So okay, we got it. We have to wrap this up and get out of here. We've gone a little long, especially if we include the top of the show, which I'm going to.
Oh yeah.
So well. why don't we plug this up?
If you want to know where the punchiness began, it was somewhere in about the first 20-minute preamble.
That's true. Okay. It's been an eventful show. So, Cole, why don't you plug us up?
Wrap us up for the last son of the JCU, the Jedi Cole Universe, at JediCole.com, is, of course, the home of Hey Kids Comics and the Rancor Pit, where you can find us every week, more or less. We're finally getting back on an even keel. Is getting our shows up on Friday now, as of this one. So, hooray.
And, hooray.
So this was like the last son of being late. And you can look for tweets. There'll be some tweets coming up, because there's some big news for the JCU coming up here pretty soon on Twitter at the Jedi Cole U, including an upcoming announcement that Mrs. Jedi Cole is going to be taking on the mic again here pretty soon with Stephen Fett from the Rancor Pit. They're going to be bringing back What'd You Think?
That's
so
awesome.
We're real excited about that. Yeah, that is awesome. Bobby Blakey, just there was like zero time available, so we've got a new surrogate Blakey, and we're really excited about that. You can write to us at jcumail@yahoo.com. If you're so inclined, look for us, the Hey Kids Comics and the Rancor Pit and the Jedi Cole Universe on Facebook. Every now and again, I bother to put something there. More often than not, Eddie bothers to put something on the Rancor Pit. And hey, speaking of the Rancor Pit, look for the Rancor Pit Live on watchonairlive.com, the first and third Sundays of every month from noon to 1 p.m. Central, with myself, Eddie Medina, Zach, our Talk Lord of the Sith, and occasionally a whole lot of other crazy characters. And speaking of the Rancor Pit, starting on May the 4th be with you on Star Wars Day, May 4th, 2017 in Burleson, Texas, on a school night, we're going to be over at the Star Wars Day. We've been invited back for a second year to come back and MC the event and offer our offer up some goodies. We're going to have a little fundraiser with some Star Wars goodies for sale, and have Eddie and myself doing some talking about the Star Wars.
That's awesome.
And that is the launch pad, if you will. This is where we are launching our first ever The Rancor Pit Roadshow Summer Invasion, which will begin on May the 4th and end in mid-August at Infinicon. 5 conventions and 2 store appearances, 7 public appearances. This is the biggest, most ambitious push we've ever made for the Rancor Pit. And in the midst of all that, the regular show and the live show will still be going on. So I don't know how I'm going to make that happen, but we're going to happen. And it's official. Our second stop will be a little later in May, last weekend in May, at Famous Monsters in Dallas. The Famous Monsters Convention is making a stop in Dallas, and the Rancor Pit will be out there in full force all weekend, so be sure and check that out. Pretty soon on the JCU site, on the Convention Awareness Project Texas site, cap-tx.info, see what I did there? We'll have some more info on the roadshow tour, on the Summer Invasion tour. We are just really excited about this. We'll be back with our friends at the G.I. Joe show. We'll be at ArlingCon. It's going to be a whirlwind summer.
That's amazing. That's awesome. I'm really excited for you guys doing that. Also, if you find us, if you look for us on Twitter, regardless of how you find us, head over to iTunes, rate and review the shows. All of the JCU shows are on there. It's a great way for advertisers to find us. It's a great way to show that you listen and allow us to do more shows out and get around more and buy new equipment and get new hosting and make the shows all around better from that perspective. We rely on you guys.
If you go back and listen to the first shows when we were still doing them on Edison Cylinder, you know what Andy's talking about. We're like broadcasting an old Marconi unit that we got off the ship, the Electra, and we got it at a garage sale of Marconi family. But we're really happy now to have improved, expanded, made the JCU something beyond anything I imagined. 223 episodes of Hey Kids Comics.
Crazy. It's crazy.
So, and it's because you guys, you continue to tune in and listen to us. We get some great feedback. We run into people quite by accident who've followed the show, and we get to see a lot of our great convention family as well who've been a part of that. Thank you to everybody, and we'll be back here next week with some really exciting. I messed with the schedule for a couple of days, and I can't even remember what's next.
It doesn't. You guys will be excited. You'll be surprised. It's going to be awesome.
There's some interesting stuff coming up. We've got some recommended readings coming up again. We've got one of the issues I'm really excited about is we're going to talk about a comic that I imagine most a genre and a specific title that I think gets overlooked by a lot of comic book shows, and that's probably the only really completely worthwhile adult comic that was ever produced.
Yeah, I'm excited. I got that stack over here. I've been reading through a few of them. It's good. It's good. It's better than I thought it was going to be because it's the first time I've ever read through. So that's all we're going to tell you about it, though.
Yeah,
so
that's coming up in the next few weeks, and we literally have we've got shows planned well into 2019 by now.
Oh, God, yes.
Certainly, maybe even as far as 2020, which scares me.
It's a commitment. Yeah. All right. We could talk about this all night, but we're going to get out of here, let you guys get back to your regularly scheduled days. But thank you for joining us for another Hey Kids Comics. We will talk to you next week. Don't forget to buy, collect, and enjoy your comics. And Catherine, how dare you steal Commandy for me? I was really excited to drop that on Cole. I was hoping he didn't think about it. All right. Say goodnight, Cole.
Good night, everybody.
Good night. And join us next week for more Hey Kids Comics.